irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wouldn't you ever be listening to State of the Arts, right?
Did you ever?
Did you ever?
What a swell party this is. Yes. You see, I'm just Mr. Musical, Michael.
I know you are.
No,
yes,
not.
You are. No, yeah. Something might be happening in that area, I understand.
Yes, so. I'll announce it shortly.
Yeah,
they
exciting stuff.
Can't talk about it yet. They haven't lifted the ban in the West yet.
Oh,
so
wow.
I can't talk about it yet.
Right. But so meanwhile, we enjoy this summer-like day in Los Angeles. What, 75, 80 degrees?
Collectively hated by all of my family members on the East Coast who are still sodden in their the snow melting, but at least they're beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
I know. That's rough. You know, when we get so we take all this for granted out here, and
I don't
really realize it.
I don't.
Well, I know you're back.
Last winter I was in Chicago. I was walking to the train. My right eye froze shut. I was like, okay, this is too cold for civilized people. I'm getting
lots of people thinking you were winking at them.
Yes. Especially the guy at the 7-Eleven when I just stood there and thawed. I was like, can I help you? Just thawing,
goodness.
Thanks. Yes.
We best thank our sponsors before we get too far into the program. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And you know, Paul, and ladies and gentlemen, we usually have a lighthearted, you know, tone to this show and our discussions here at State of the Arts, but today we're discussing a topic that is far more serious. Yep. The proposed changes to the Actors' Equity 99-seat waiver contract have created a great clash of opinions on this hot topic, and a great deal of the shows we discuss and review here on this show are productions that would not exist without this particular contract in its current form.
So today we are joined by two members of the LA theater community to discuss these proposed changes to the new equity waiver contract. In addition, we'll be discussing a new app created specifically for the LA theater community that proposes to make finding a show as easy as finding a hamburger. I'm very interested to find out about that. Please welcome CEO and editor-in-chief of Footlights, Peter Finlayson, and owner and artistic director of the Whitefire Theater, Brian Rasmussen. Let me make sure I have those correct. Those are correct? I got both of those right?
Yeah.
Good, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. We know that you're both very active and anxious to discuss this topic, and we're going to get to that very shortly. But, Michael, before we get there, how was your week?
You know, thank you for asking. Super wonderful week. Closing Seussical, the musical, with Kathy Rigby down at Redondo Beach.
She was such a doll. She was so sweet.
Yes,
I mean,
I only
met her on the phone when she was on the show, but she's just like exactly who you would expect Kathy Rigby to be.
And you would get that same feeling if you saw her live in person on the stage. She is such a star, and she is so genuine. And the audience could not get enough of her, quite frankly.
Oh,
so it was a huge, huge, successful engagement at both the Fullerton Plummer Auditorium and at Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Always nice to be down there by the beach. And then Inside Out, for which your company is doing the programs, which is continuing to get some knockout reviews.
100% positive on Bitter Lemons.
Yes,
I read it earlier today.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. So it's got this weekend and next weekend before it comes to its close at the Grove Theater Center in Burbank.
GTC, the little theater right behind the – I did a show there, and it's odd that you when instructing people to do it, you say, okay, walk past the airplane and make a left at the softball fields. But a cuter little 99-seater
– very charming.
You'd never know that little place was
and
there.
And it's been updated, too.
Oh, has it?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, it's quite looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. So – six beautiful women, Sandy Bainham, our friend, who's been on this program before, and Adrian Russ and Doug Haverty. They've put a lot of hard work into this 20th anniversary production of a very successful off-Broadway show in the day.
Great.
Yeah, so that's been my week.
All right.
Yeah.
Mine, not as eventful. I was at we've been at a studio for a couple of weeks. I was at Penn State with my film,
right?
Penn State theater festival, but the College Town Film Festival, nomadic film festival we go around with, and I'm doing this show coming up. I had to learn some choreography.
You did, yes.
And it's been 30 years since I've been in a musical, but I had to learn this choreography. So I'm in Pennsylvania. Didn't bring the proper gear to practice choreography.
Which would have been what?
Which would have
tights
been
tights and
no, which would have been sneakers. I had boots. That's all I had. Boots and I had sweatpants to
so
like
boots and tights.
No,
oh, just boots.
Sweatpants and boots.
Oh, sweatpants.
And rehearsing choreography in your room in
I'd
sweatpants
love to see
and
this.
Boots
yeah.
is awkward enough. But here's the hint to people who do this in a hotel room. If you have the headset on to not bother your neighbors while you're practicing choreography shirtless and sweats with boots on, the chambermaid will come in and see you doing that, just so you know.
And she probably thinks otherwise of what you are doing.
Because I dance like other people sees, she was very concerned.
Oh,
so,
my.
But just one of those things we do.
That's the kind of thing you want to get a photo of.
Yes,
but,
and thank God that doesn't
so much.
Exist. Let's introduce the gentleman to your left, Michael. I get this thing kicked off.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, our first guest is responsible for Footlights, which provides programs to over 300 theaters and over 500 productions a year, and is now in its 10th year of publication. Before we get to our discussion of the proposed changes to the 99-seat Equity Theater Plan, we'll be discussing an upcoming offering from Footlights, an app for your smartphone, that is, destined to become an essential tool in searching for all manner of performing arts in Los Angeles and eventually beyond. Please welcome a man who says theater saved his life, Peter Finlayson.
Peter!
Good morning.
Peter.
Good morning.
How are you, Peter?
Good morning.
I'm great. How about you guys?
Good, good. I want to mention, too, just so because Peter and I actually discussed talking about this app on the show before any of this stuff hit the fan, as it were.
Yes, I know.
So I just want to make sure that when we're talking about this, that it's not like, oh, let's tuck in some shameless
Yeah, no, we've been trying to get
here.
Peter on the show
we're trying
for,
to get Peter on, and
now,
just now so. That we have him, we're going to talk about both things, but I want to make sure we draw that distinction that this was already on the dance card before all of this iHeart 99 stuff happened. But along those lines, Peter, what was the, was there a causal event that sort of made this app sort of something that you wanted to do? Was it born of necessity, just thinking about it? How did it come about?
I think one of the greatest problems in theater in Los Angeles is the ability to find more than the show that you know about. We all know the shows that people we are familiar with are performing in, or we hear about a show we particularly like. But the fact of the matter is that anywhere you go in Los Angeles, whether it be in beyond from Ventura down into Orange County, there's a show within 2-3 miles of you.
Yeah.
In many cases, there's maybe 5 or 10 or 15 within a mile of you.
Which is saying something, given how sprawling Los Angeles is, LA County is. Yeah,
exactly. So there's a great deal of theater, and a lot of it is small, and a lot of it doesn't have the wherewithal or the money to publicize themselves. So there needs to be a way for us to understand that. We need to find a way to see a play as easily as we can go through to see a movie, or as I said, go buy a hamburger.
Right.
You know, I'm hungry. I want to see a show.
Yeah.
You know? And while I'm here in Santa Monica, and there's, you know, 5 theaters right here, I'm on Ventura Boulevard. No, here's a Whitefire. You know, it's just knowing that they're there, and then being able to get as much information about the show as possible. And that was the genesis.
Oh, okay. And is it being finished now? Does the app exist? I mean, are people able to download it?
There are beta versions available both on the App Store for Apple,
okay,
and also on the Google Store, Google Play.
Okay,
it's just called Footlights. Mm-hmm. You can download it. It's free.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It is active. We're constantly working on it. We will have one more release on a beta, which I think is going out tomorrow, actually.
Okay. One of the things that I love about Footlights, the publication, is that, you know, you see, as Peter mentioned, a lot of these theaters don't have the wherewithal or financial support to be able to really promote themselves as well as they could be. And one of the things that I like about Footlights is that you will see a good number of shows in there that you won't see advertised in the LA Times. It's going directly to that audience, to that market that does that.
Right.
So this app sounds like almost like a companion piece to that, just in a huge digital form rather than just a hard copy form.
Oh, indeed. You know? It's hard for us to walk down the street without looking at our phones. So
yeah, exactly.
I'll put it where it is.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, speaking of that, Did you see the video that's circulating at the basketball game? I don't know. It was someone posted it on Facebook today. But, you, Michael, I know you. It's a particular annoyance of you with people with their cell phones,
yeah.
you know, at theater or whatever.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
This person was at a basketball game and so engrossed in her phone, did not see the basketball coming at her, clocked her right in the face. Looks
wow.
like a broke her nose.
Digital
horrible,
karma.
Horrible, yeah. Horrible video, but it's just like, you know, look up. Let's not all look down. All
Why time. Am I...
I'm not saying
this.
That if you get the Footlights app. So if you get the Footlights app, just be aware of someone throwing a basketball in your face.
Yeah. While
oh,
you're
oh my God.
But you do. You have this like little gleeful little.
I do. I actually get the hair on my arms standing.
Yeah, okay. So.
A little bit of divine intervention.
Yes, we exactly. will. When. We will. It's just. The app's called Footlights.
It's Footlights.
In the beta form now.
Yes.
Okay, and we will we'll definitely be mentioning
that. When you say beta form, for those people who aren't really technical like yourself, that means specifically?
That means that the app is available. It is usable. There may or may not be some glitches in the process. There may right. be some functions that don't work entirely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the basic function is there and yeah. and working.
It's the digital Fantastic. Equivalent of work in progress.
Yeah, let's call it a dress rehearsal.
A dress rehearsal. There you go.
More I get it now.
More suited. Okay. All right. So now on to the topic, the other topic we wanted to address today, which both of our guests here are for. Peter, I was wondering if Brian, also, you can chime in at this point. For the listeners, if there are arts-related listeners here who are not as familiar, can one or both of you kind of bring this whole thing down to sort of a thumbnail sketch for the layman about what is proposed to take place here? O'Brien or Peter?
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, Peter. Yeah.
I don't do anything on thumbnails. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you should explain this.
Oh, very good.
You have 1,000 words. Go ahead.
And 1,000 words. Right. Since 1989, Los Angeles Intimate Theater Community has been working under an agreement. It was actually a settlement, an out-of-court settlement, in which professional actors, members of Actors Equity, could participate in shows that had 99 seats or less. And they would be paid a stipend, basically to cover expenses. And they would be covered by certain union rules, you know, the certain hygienic rules, certain safety rules, certain participatory right. rules. And it also allowed them to drop out of a show if they got another job. Because, frankly, we're in Los Angeles and, you know,
right.
we don't make money on stage. We make money in television and film.
That's why we live near the factory.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this program has been running very... you know, bouncy sort of speak since 89. Right. And February the 13th of this year, an announcement came out from Equity that they were offering a promulgated proposal that was going to override the agreement.
Okay.
Basically, they're putting it into a opportunity for actors to... let everyone know how they feel about it. It's a vote, but it's a non-binding vote, and the final decision will be made by the National Council of Actors Equity Association.
Now, that's an important distinction that you just said there. So it's a vote, but it's a non-binding vote. And Tim Robbins touched on this when he talked about it on KCRW yesterday, mm-hmm. that... So what exactly is the weight of a non-binding vote, or does it have any weight?
If you'd like me to explain it as a non-biased individual, it means that it's an advisory vote.
Okay.
If you ask me as a proponent of 99-seat theater, it says we're going to be eating something that we don't particularly like the taste of.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. Didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep going.
So I mean, that's the long and short. It's the whole purpose. There's many reasons behind it. One of the reasons is that the cost to Actors Equity to administer the 99-seat plan has been horrendous.
Okay.
There's no income that is generated to Equity itself. There's no fees from the shows. There's no dues that are collected from the actors other than their annuals.
Right.
And it's expensive. It's, yeah. You know, they have to keep track of it. They have, and I understand the cost there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's justified in that regard. In terms of the impact on the community, I think it will be harsh. Yeah. Harsh at best. The limitations on the ability for self-produced actors is that anybody can put up a show. We can all be Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland as long as we have a barn.
Right.
But if we have to pay for the barn and we have to find some way to pay for it, we're in trouble because we are no longer have the capacity to be a registered legal business. We can't raise money through nonprofit contributions.
Okay.
If we want to work in a membership company, which many people do, as long as you are a member of April 1st, incidentally, that's prior to the actual passage of this proposal.
Yeah, I found that interesting, too. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to let everybody know who the members are before the law, the rule goes into effect.
Yes, yes.
But anyone that wants to become a member of a company after that will be a different type of member. They will not have the same opportunity to volunteer their services as an actor. They will have to be paid minimum wage.
But wouldn't that also mean that the person, becoming a performer in a company would actually have a better pay scale than the person who was existing, could have been volunteering for the company for 30 plus years? And that's a different tier, isn't it?
Well, if you consider $9 an hour a better pay structure.
Yes, yes.
I mean, frankly, as an actor, I'm insulted by the idea that someone should pay me $9 an hour to act.
Yeah. I
would far rather you tell me you're going to pay me $1,000 an hour and I'll give you the $1,000 an hour check back.
Yeah, exactly.
Than
yeah.
to be told that here's $9 an hour.
Right.
It's insulting. It's art is not about pay. Art is about the creative energies.
No, and that's the big thing.
Well,
that's
never has been.
The biggest issue here is the art and commerce, rarly
yes.
get along, and this is, I think, is a personification of that.
It would seem to me that what everything that has been discussed and is being discussed today is that equity, and what is her name, Mary
McCall.
Yes. Not the greatest spokesperson for this cause, I think. This is my personal opinion. I listened to that show yesterday and felt she was, really trying to defend herself in a very gray and vague and keep herself in line with her job. And I guess that's what you do, but it wasn't pacifying.
She's based out of the New York office, right? Isn't she?
No. Yes, she is.
She is.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the other thing. I'm sorry, Michael.
No, I was going to say, but I think they should be spending their time accelerating the paychecks of equity actors, in regional theater in this country, as opposed to the actors that want to keep their chops up and, act because they're passionate about acting, and then hopefully go out and get one of those equity-paying jobs.
Yeah,
I mean, it's ridiculous, those contracts. You can't live on those contracts either. What is it?
Right, exactly.
From $300 up to, about $518 or something, depending on what the contract is?
A hardly livable wage.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Be concerned about that. That's professional theater.
Well, I think 99 Seat Theater is also professional.
Well, yes, I didn't mean to dismiss that.
It's a different opportunity. It's a different level of experimentation. And in many ways, and I don't mean to, occupy the time here, but
no, that's what it's about.
It's the 99 Seat Theater is in many ways the precursor to what American theater is going to look like in the next 30 years.
Right.
It's not the big houses. It's going to be 150 to 200 seat houses all over the country where professional actors will be able to make a living.
Right. It's almost like a live theater version of what we're seeing in other sort of forms of arts, like, how network television is basically being replaced by the isolated Netflix and watching things, watching what we want when we want to watch it. And there's far more choices out there. And we're going to see the same thing in theater that we do. Not everything is going to be, nothing against the big, grand, Busby Berkeley musical type thing, because those will always exist because people always love that. But I do think that the writing is on the wall with that. Thank you very much. I want to share one little thing here that was on the I Love 99 Facebook page. This is a quote from John Rubenstein, of course, a great actor in all sorts of forms. I think most recently he was the Charlemagne in the revival of Pippin.
That's correct.
And I just found this to be so potent, I wanted to share it and make sure I get this right. So forgive me for reading this. I don't like to read on the show, but I would like to share this. From John Rubenstein, "The utter falsehood you are so aggressively and inexplicably promoting is that if we vote for this change, in quotes, which dictates that actors in 99-seat theater must hereafter be paid by the hour and be paid at least minimum wage, suddenly, magically, and spontaneously, all this gorgeous hidden money will unearth itself and be bestowed upon the actors. The small theaters will continue to put forth all those terrific productions, but at long last, the actors will be taking home a decent living wage instead of doing all that wonderful work for next to nothing. Those greedy, unscrupulous producers will finally be forced to stop hiding all those extra profits under their mattresses. Actors should be paid for their work. Hell yes. Vote yes, and your wonderful work will continue as before, but you will finally be paid 4 or 5 times more for it. Sound good? Sure does to me. Thank you and bless you, AEA. But it's a lie. And you know it is, because all that extra money that your entire proposal rests on, the money we foolish, gullible actors are being swindled out of, and which those of us urging a no vote are trying so irrationally to deny ourselves and our fellow union actors, that big pot of extra money out of which all these fabulous, long overdue higher wages will be scooped does not exist. And thank you, John Rubenstein, for putting that in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great phrasing on that, and so concise. In less than 1,000 words,
yes.
I should mention.
Yes.
Well, that's, I think that's part of the problem is that there is no pile of money. There are big corporations running the theaters that now we just want a little bit more of their profit for our own pay. That is not what's going on. And as you were talking about before, I'm in a daily battle between business and commerce because our theater is run by ticket sales. So I'm dealing with that on a regular basis. And what this does is it cuts the artistic legs off of companies such as Sacred Fools and Antias, and who are doing great work, Rogue Theater, that are doing some of the most cutting-edge theater in America today. We're the largest producer of theater in America now. Los Angeles has surpassed New York.
Right. Many of which become big revenue generators for Equity when they do go on and become,
well,
you know.
That's the whole idea. I mean, we want Equity to support us and to support our vision and our artistic journeys. This doesn't do that. And what I was thinking is I just don't understand why they're not using funds to support an Equity theater in Los Angeles, have 3 shows a year, pay everybody Equity wages, and continue to create work for everybody instead of trying to take away work from their membership. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And as a theater maker on a daily basis, it's disheartening to have people to come in from New York to tell us how to run our Los Angeles paradigm. And we're very unique and needs very unique handling. I've been in it now for 32 years. And so seeing that from that perspective has given me a very unique insight into the whole process.
You know, I wanted to say, Brian, because you're really the embodiment of this, if you don't mind me imposing this on you. I'm making you a superhero now. Mm-hmm. You're the embodiment. Wow. Because you are – no, because think about it. We're talking about art and commerce, and you're the combination. You're an artistic director for a theater in Los Angeles, but you also own a brick-and-mortar theater building that you have to run and pay rent on and utilities and all that.
Well,
how
just does to be it clear, I don't own the building. I don't own the real estate.
Okay. But
we live in Sherman Oaks, so I have to be fairly wealthy to do that.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I am not one of those huge producers that they're talking about that has bundles of money to do this. I am an actor that has his own space, and I'm fortunate in that. But I am really just the in-between guy from one person paying their rent to the theater to actually the landlord. But in that in-between, I'm trying to create theater on a daily basis.
So what happens to you? What happens to you if this goes through? What happens to the scenario that you are in right now?
Well, fortunately, I saw a lot of this coming a while ago, and so we've been preparing for something like this, and we're constructing our particular business plan to adjust to any of that. We are forced to stop developing new pieces, and that's what we do in Los Angeles. We're a cutting-edge theater, creating new works regularly that then go on to film and television and bigger stages around the country. So if we don't nurture that, if we don't take care of that, it's a fragile system, and it takes a lot of support, and we need to get that support from somewhere. It's not just going to happen magically.
Right.
People spend a lot of time trying to get grants funding, subscriptions, however they run their particular business. And all theaters are run differently. That's what a lot of people don't understand. Some are run for-profit, some are run non-profit. But everybody's trying to pay the bills.
Right.
And coming in and trying to create a system that will actually keep that from happening just doesn't make sense to me from our own union. Right. And unfortunately, the tactics that the union's using in order to get the information out is a little underhanded. And
exactly.
This morning, they had one from Samuel L. Jackson. He's one of my favorite actors. And his particular point of view is similar to Charlene Woodard's in that they're not working in the middle of 99-seat theater like we are.
I was going to say, if there's an authority for equity waiver theater, it would be Samuel Jackson,
that's
the highest grossing stage
the
actor
that are
or film
working,
actors.
Exactly. Yeah. The people that are in that, like Tim Robbins and people like that, know what the situation is. And so equity can only get a few people that are kind of doing things that they might think that they might have a point of view about that. But it's very clear that they're... situation is basically a house of cards, and it falls under any kind of detailed, factual investigation.
Right.
And Rebecca and Tim both, I thought, did a great job in handling that discussion yesterday.
Yes, I'd actually like to play a clip from that.
Yes,
I have
Tim.
This here. This is, and for those of you who are interested, you should listen to it in its entirety. It's we're hijacking from one radio show for another radio show today, but we believe the message is worth it. This is on the KCRW website. This was yesterday called "Which Way LA Is Acting a Labor of Love or a Job for Pay?" And this is just a little. Clip with Tim Robbins.
That, but that is the way we would have to do it. I mean, it's like the Directors Guild telling you you can't experiment with a new camera, or imagine the Musicians Union telling its members it can't sing in a choir or do a jam. Even SAG's designed a way for young filmmakers to make films on a tight budget via their waiver rule. Hundreds of actors are appalled by this measure and embarrassed and angry at the refusal of the union to acknowledge the reality of the Los Angeles intimate theater scene.
And I just thought that encapsulated it so beautifully.
Of course, exactly.
And he touches on something which I know with Michael and I, what year is this for us doing this show?
Five.
5 years.
Yeah.
One of the things that I don't think people really know about, you know, we can talk all, as we have been, about art and art for art's sake and doing all this, but if we want to interject a little more commerce into it, let's do this. Let's talk about the creative irrigation that that 99-seat theater is for the film and television industry. Because, I mean, we need something to fill that creative Jones while we're doing a three-line thing on CSI.
I'll tell you, I'll tell you a perfect example of that. Back in the 80s, I think, when I was working at the Odyssey Theater, Jodie Foster came to see a play there, loved it, bought it, turned it into a movie, and got an Oscar. I mean, it seems to be such an obvious road.
Right. What was that play?
Nell.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of situation is exactly the type of environment that we should be creating, not keeping us from doing that. And this particular plan seems to be doing that. And so those kinds of situations, we shouldn't fight against the film and television industry. We should be embracing them because we are the fertile farmlands in which there are new writers, their new talent, their new scripts. We're working with them all the time. I'm collaborating right now with Bobby Maresco. He won the Academy Award for Crash. We're working on some theater projects with him. Anybody who's in the industry usually started in theater in some form.
Right.
It's a whole nother day, a whole nother discussion to talk about the support of
the
theater through that.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely one of the discussions that can help fund our situation rather than trying to find it out of a cloud somewhere,
right,
you know,
right.
that seems to be everybody's point of view on the equity side, that it's just going to come from somewhere.
Right.
And I can tell you from being in the middle of it, it is not coming from anywhere except the ticket sales. They're certainly coming from some grants. Great theaters around town are doing an awesome job in doing that. John Flynn over at The Rogue. Places like that are doing amazing work. And the truth is that we have world-class theater actors in Los Angeles
we
that
do.
Are here to make a film and television living, and we should embrace that and use that as a shining badge of our artistic vision. And certainly they are worrying about this as well, because they constantly need to be working on new material in the theater, and we're always doing that. Right. And that's what makes actors excited. And the film and television business is our friend. I work in it as an actor. And so I'm going back and forth on a regular basis. I was literally going from rehearsals in a play at the theater to shooting, and that is every actor's ultimate. And I think the Los Angeles community is a unique environment in order to do that kind of work. It can't be an either-or situation, so we need that kind of support, and I think that's one of the avenues we can look at.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter, do you find that, as I asked Brian earlier, what is it, if you don't mind me asking, what would you mentioned earlier that it would be a harsh effect if this went through? I would go farther and say it would be a devastating effect. Mm-hmm.
My initial reaction is that it's devastating, right. But I think, excuse the expression, it's a little old, but the pluck of theater artists is they will survive.
Right.
We will survive, and we'll find a way to put up a show, because theater is the heart and soul of humanity. It's the oldest art form. We have to tell a story. It's our nature. We've got to do it, otherwise we die.
And speaking of that, if I could touch on something we talked earlier, theater saved your life. Can you expand on that? Are we getting too personal if I ask about that?
No, I pursued acting in college briefly, and I've had a passion for it. And then when I found it wasn't coming as quickly as I wanted, I found a very healthy life at the bottom of a bottle and on top of a mirror, and I did that for about 30 years. And when I started working in intimate theater, in 99 Seat Theater in Los Angeles, I began to realize that the success that I believe I was owed becoming a star was not what I really wanted. It was that ability to communicate to an audience. It was the ability to know that I had touched somebody in that audience and had made them feel, or I had felt something unique to me and unique to them. It's expanding the horizon of humanity, and that's what theater does.
Yeah. And I really appreciate your remarks. I spent some time in those locations myself.
Didn't we all?
It changes lives, and it's an important part of the community. We need to support it. We don't need to squelch it. We don't need to put restrictions on it. We need to support our arts, not eliminate them. Yeah. We've seen the damage that can do in our school system.
Absolutely.
So,
second guest on our show, it was Carol Channing.
Yes.
And she was talking about, she called arts fertilizer on the brain. Mm. And one of the things she said, you only need to look at the, and I thought this was fascinating, look at the math and the science scores from schools that have fully developed arts programs versus those that don't. And there's just no comparison. I mean, there's just no comparison. Everyone thinks it's just sort of this frivolous thing, and it's not. It obviously, as you said, nurtures the soul, but it nurtures the brain as well.
Let me ask Brian a question. Being a producer of theater here in Los Angeles, there are producers of theater here who do have bigger budgets on the small intimate theater level, and
God love them,
and they do share that budget. I mean, I'm not going to name names, but they do give the actors more than what even is being proposed here. But and they'll provide food in between the matinee and the evening performance, and they try to give them back something.
Absolutely.
But I can't imagine that is very overall very many are doing that or able to do that.
Well, it's kind of like the economic structure in the world.
Exactly.
I mean, not very many people can afford a lot of that.
Right.
And I think that it's we should applaud those that do that. And there are a few, and they're few and far between. But I do think that getting them to be a part of the whole process is an important aspect of the entire community.
Mm-hmm.
And but it takes money. It does take support of whatever, and that's how everybody is functioning today. And so I think it's trying to find that source is everybody's journey, and whatever that source is, everybody's run by different things, schools, right. Ticket sales.
Yeah, different funding, different backers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even our, you know, Center Theater Group operates in the same fashion. You know, they rely on their ticket sales, yet they have, you know,
70% of their funding actually comes from donors, not from ticket sales.
Right. Mm. Oh, 70%?
Right. Yeah, that's the last figure I heard.
It
might be down to 60, but... Yeah.
Well,
I didn't realize
the other 30% actually comes from me. I just want to say I'm a big supporter of the Center Theater Group.
Well, another thing that's brought up, too, in this whole situation is that the idea of the New York situation coming to Los Angeles to kind of straighten things out. And unfortunately, the largest theaters in our own city that have those kind of contracts are run by New York and Chicago people. And that is a sore point for a lot of Los Angeles artists, because most of the jobs are being brought in from New York and the East Coast for a lot of those theaters, when in fact we have, like I said, world-class talent right here in Los Angeles.
And that's been, I should say, having spent time in Chicago, sorry to cut you off, Ron, but that's also in a situation that Chicago actors are up against quite a bit, too, mm-hmm. because they get, you know, they have imported people all the time, too. So well, just
Well, absolutely. I mean, and I know the similar type of proposal has decimated a lot of that situation in Chicago, mm-hmm. where a lot of them had to go non-equity, and that's... Unfortunately, a lot of what's going to happen if this goes through is people will be pushed either to have an exodus from equity, go FICOR, go non-equity in order to keep creating, because artists will, as you said, create despite the fact that they're taking funding or putting restrictions on that. Mm-hmm. They will create, and they'll go non-union, or they'll go whatever they have to do in order to do that.
You know, I believe there's one theater, and I don't really know the name of it, but I think it was said in reference to the mm-hmm. show yesterday, or perhaps mm-hmm. in one of the comments, has already stopped seeing equity actors. Mm-hmm. Now they're mm-hmm. only seeing people that are non-union. No.
Well, it makes sense.
I want to touch on something else, too, because Charlene Woodard, who's been a real vocal proponent of the change, I want to say something about this, because listening to her speak yesterday, you know, it's interesting because on paper, her ideas are very honorable. You know, the idea of what we are, you know, what we are worth, and that she's a professional.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. although I will say that I think it's a slightly skewed perspective, because when you mm-hmm. do primarily one-person shows, it's, you know, cheering for more salary is not as much of a hit. But that being said, I got my little dig in there.
Right.
But I want to say, and I know from what I speak, I did a one-person show for 9 years nationally. I did 1,400 performances of it, so I'm not just... talking out of my hat. But there is this pervasive, I don't want to call it naivete, but it's just, you know, there doesn't seem to be a in-the-trenches awareness coming from these voices. As I said, Samuel Jackson, phenomenal actor, but why is this the person who is who they're choosing to advise on this subject matter?
Right.
Mostly because they're famous.
Of course.
You know.
But to speak to that, we also, on our side, if there, and I hate to use that expression, we do have Tim Robbins. We have Fred Stewart. Right. We have Jason Alexander just released a very poignant statement on the topic. And there's others to follow.
But haven't these people been, aren't the whole reason they're speaking for, quote, unquote, our side is because they have been actively involved in this?
Certainly. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the reward they've gotten, and they speak of that, is far greater than any monetary exchange. And I don't want to belittle the notion of actors getting paid. God, I'd love to be able to make
all.
A living as an actor.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's a reality. And it's, the reality is that if I'm going to act, I'm going to create art, and that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back just from that whole discussion of the economics of theater and how some producers in Los Angeles are making oodles of money.
Sure.
And if you look at their 990s, okay, right. it looks like there's money being made. But there's the expenses on that are outlandish.
Sure.
You know, when an average theater company, you know, in Hollywood pays anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 a month for rent, it's you've already got a hole that you can't dig yourself out of.
Yeah.
You know, so and everything else involved. There's the utilities that are involved. There's the rights to the play. There's the it's absurd. And if we really get to the subject of economics and budgets, why is it that a union that represents 50,000 actors needs a excess of $20 million a year budget? Of which a vast majority goes to salaries.
Mm-hmm. And on that, the budget, normally half the budget is just for the space. That's usually the budgets I'm dealing with when shows are coming in. And show budgets can run anywhere. This is normal. Bigger budgets are anywhere between 20 and 50,000 per. Mm-hmm. So if you say do a three-show season, it's 150,000. That's just for the shows.
Right.
That's not the space. It's not the power. It's not any of that. So sure. You have, let's say, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 a month just in rent. Then you have all of the show costs and everything. You can't make that happen with 99 seats. It's just mathematically impossible.
Right.
So we have to figure out a way to supplement that, and that's what came up with the whole 99 proposal in the first place in order to have actors continue to work. So it's kind of clear that they didn't want that in the first place. They fought us hard, and thanks to Joe Stern, Marie Gobetti, and those guys over there, and a lot of them fought that hard fight back in the 80s to make this happen, and now they're trying to take it away again for very clear reasons.
Yeah, well,
and we know what those
revenue
are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I can say it. It's a missed revenue source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, that's really.
But we're all on the same team. That's right. What's crazy about this whole situation, and to see, it's like suing your own parents or something that you don't want to ever have to do that. And this is, seems like that's what the case is.
I also find it interesting with the number of 501c3s. There's so many nonprofits how can you? I mean, you're really dictating whether or not someone can. I mean, when I donate to a 501c nonprofit, I get, you know, I'm able to write that off of my taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's being dictated that we can't do that. In effect, I mean, I know there's sort of provisions in there for that, but I just that occurred to me just now.
Yeah.
But prevents us from supporting.
Really. Yeah, there's
all
kinds
of oxygen.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's onerous. It's abusive.
No. Mm-hmm. Michael, we're coming toward the end of the hour, but I would like to, speaking of promoting theater in Los Angeles, I would like to do our arts calendar today, a little later in the hour than we normally do. But
or at least one of them.
Do that? Yeah, you want to do that one, that first one that we have?
Excuse me, yes.
Why don't you throw that
Yes,
out there?
I will do that. One with your name on it?
Yes.
I'd be happy to do that. When Confederate troops are no longer able to hold, General Robert E. Lee has no choice but to order the evacuation of the capital at Richmond. The Army of Northern Virginia swings west, beginning a march that is now known as Lee's final retreat. It is this retreat trail, the road to
Appomattox.
Okay, thank you. It looked like approximate for a moment. Appomattox that present day Bow Weeks. The present day Bow Weeks and his wife Jenny are following, retracing the steps of Lee's army in order for Bow to investigate the family's place in the annals of history. As General Lee is faced with the disintegration of his army, Bow and Jenny confront a past that threatens to destroy their marriage. As past and present begin to collide, both must decide for themselves what it means to surrender and what price they're willing to pay for union. The road to Appomattox, thank you, is a West Coast premiere playing through this weekend at the Colony Theater in Burbank.
And I want to throw one more thing out there. I met a gentleman in an audition a couple of days ago named Stuart Fingret, I believe is his name, and he works at Granada Hills High School, and they are doing Urinetown the Musical, and I just love the fact that a high school is doing Urinetown the Musical, and just they even put out the little poster, is this really the title, which I love. And that's playing this weekend at Granada Hills High School. For tickets, please call the student store, 818-360-2361, extension 383, and that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Granada Hills High School has balls. So I just like that.
Apparently, it's a big
wonderful
words.
Thing that they're doing.
And there's also, speaking of theater in town, and Brian at his theater has smart people. Yeah. Right? Two professors of a physics genius and a stripper walk into a play. What could go wrong? Written and directed by Mark Fink. It is produced by Jake O'Flaherty. It is in progress. And it runs through April 11th at the Whitefire Theater, Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks, brownpapertickets.com.
Love brown paper. Brian, what else you got coming up there that you could let people know about?
Well, we actually just started our spring rep, so we have a number of shows that are running once a week. We have Hollywood Shorts. That's on Monday night. It's 10-minute comedies with Hollywood's TV
such
and
a
film
great,
writers.
Such a great picture on your promotional card.
It's a great format. And then we have the Love the One You're With. It's a world premiere play that's on Wednesday nights. Heart of a Gypsy Troubadour's on Thursday nights. As you said, Smart People's on Saturday nights. And we have solo shows running in rep as well. So we've got a lot of stuff going on right now. You can just go to whitefiretheater.com and check that out.
And the website for Footlights is gofootlights.com, right?
Yes, it is.
Which I went to the website today, and it's just you've overhauled it or something. It just looks
awesome. We're making major changes.
It looks great. Looks
Thank
great.
You.
Brian, also, I just one of the great things about the Whitefire Theater is the location. And I always like to tell people, go over there, get there early, park, utilize the valet parking for the restaurant. Is the Boneyard still across the way?
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, just go over there. The best barbecue in
That's
that
what
area.
I hear.
Town.
You're quite smitten with that.
And they pour a nice cocktail over there, too.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, so, yes, we know it well.
Yes. But no, just
but that's a good point too. The ripple effect that theater has
in
the local community with economic backing of people to go and have dinner at our local restaurants, and we're fortunate to have world class restaurants all in walking distance. And almost every night after a show, a majority of our audience will go across the street and
patronize
to another
those
place
other businesses,
and go. The other night on Monday night, we were the entire.
Dining room
clientele inside of there, and I think that really does pay off to the locals, and certainly you know, we feed each other. We're all a part of that community, and that's one of those things that would be affected as well. Certainly,
the one person show I mentioned that I was doing, I did it in New York at the Players Theater on McDougal Street in the Village, and Joanna Moscone, who's been a guest of the show here, her family owns Monty's Italian Restaurant right there on McDougal Street. I tell you, the relationship that we forged in that time, I haven't been able to pay for a drink at Monty's now because going back to, and we're talking months and years later.
Sure, so theater and restaurants go way
back. Exactly. And not just because so many actors used to be waiters. No.
Well, again, it just feeds each other, literally. Exactly. So,
hey, we got 4 minutes.
We have to baptize these gentlemen.
Gentlemen, we want to know if you could share a tale of woe, something that happened on stage or in a show you were either in or observing. Something that went south that our listeners might find amusing?
Well, certainly having a theater allows for a lot of those stories to happen. I think for me, though, as an actor, one of the best ones was when I was in a production of Romeo and Juliet, and the Romeo and Juliet did not like each other very much, and they would sabotage each other during the performance in a number of fun ways. And one of them happened to be during a performance one afternoon, and I was told about it, that it was going to happen, so we all watched as the Romeo did not place the dagger for Juliet when she's supposed to commit suicide after she finds him. And as you saw her grab or try to grab for the non-existent dagger, you saw her mind panicking, trying to figure out how she was going to do that. Now, this is a large house. This is a large equity house. So, of course, miming it would have probably been the best thing to do. She did not make that choice. And instead, she began to choke herself to death. With her hands around her neck, and then died, which is physically impossible to do. But it was hilarious to watch, and is one of those great moments in theater that I was lucky enough to have witnessed myself.
Someone choking themselves.
Do you remember her name?
Oh, I do. But I will not. I will not divulge those names or the place that I saw that at. But it was one of our top theaters. It
reminds me of that old tale. I don't even know if this is true. It's probably urban legend, but there's an old story about a. It was supposed to be a knife in a drawer in the beginning of a show, and the woman's supposed to come down. It's breakfast, and she says good morning to her husband. He's supposed to pull a knife or a gun out and kill her immediately, and that's the start of the show. And of course, the prop is not set, and she comes. She sits down, and he takes a jar and flicks jelly at her, screaming, "Poison jelly! Poison jelly! Poison jelly!" I think Kevin Tice in Chicago told me that story. I don't know if it's real or whatever, but I the best part of it is that poor person who had to die by having jelly. You know, that's an
that's a challenge.
That's a challenge.
Check your props. Check
exactly. Peter, you got something for us?
All right, Peter.
Yeah, most of my best memories are the times when actors are saved by other actors. I think first lead I ever had, this 40 years ago. I was playing in God's Favorite, and I was playing Ben, and he has this 5-page monologue. And I got about halfway through, and all of a sudden I had no idea where I was, who I was, what I was talking about, where I was going. And my poor family is around me because I'm now divulging this horrendous tale of how, you know, I'm being tested by God. And the woman playing my wife just looked at me and she said, "Honey, it's going to be all right. Let's move on."
Yeah. that's someone who's listening. Listening.
So, but now it's just remarkable how often it's a great blanket of security to be on stage.
Yes.
People love you, and you're caught, and you're saved, and you tell stories.
Yes, and the relationships and the friendships forge of that.
Absolutely.
And that's a point that Brian made before we went on the air. Is that one of the good, positive byproducts of this whole debacle is how it's really unifying us and bringing us together.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
And thank you for what you do
in
Los Angeles. And
we love
Los Angeles.
Thank you for letting me do.
Websites again, gentlemen, gofootlights.com.
Correct.
And whitefiretheater.com.
Theater with an R-E.
Theater has the RE spelling.
Yes,
that was
my
next question. Yep. Gentlemen, thank you for all that you've done. Michael, as always, a pleasure sharing the
thank
mic with you.
Thank you, sir. Yes. See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig right here on LA Talk Radio.